The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Good morning. You're very welcome along to The Greg Hughes Show this 7th of January. It's Wednesday, of course, 4 minutes past nine, and we have another packed 2 hours for you, keeping you informed and entertained. Lots coming up on the show, and we'll kick off with our triple take. It's where we look at three of the biggest stories making the papers this morning. And we'll start with the Irish Times. We should be loaded. You should be rolling in money. No one should be going to food banks. No one should be stuck for cash. No one should be struggling to pay their electricity bills, should they? Because we took in, and when I say we, it's clearly not us, a record 106 billion euro tax last year, and this despite the fear of US tariffs hanging over our heads. Government tax receipts surged by almost 9% to a record 106 billion last year, despite the uncertainty caused by US tariffs. The year-end exchequer returns published by the Department of Finance yesterday showed the government collected 94.7 billion in corporation tax in 2025, 4.4 billion down on the previous year. However, the 2024 total was inflated by almost 11 billion from the Apple tax case, stripping the actual income from both years. Underlying corporation tax rose by 17% to 32.9 billion in 2025. So, I mean, obviously it's significant money. It's a massive amount of money. I do struggle to figure out how in a country of our size with a population of, what, 5.7 million, that you can take in 106 billion euro in tax in a single year, much of that a windfall, and still struggle. It's very hard to understand why that money doesn't trickle down. Anyone with any insights into that, educate me, please, because I'm very, very open to understanding what could be going on there. Enoch Burke was back in court, and I believe he had some level of success. Jailed anti-transgender school teacher Enoch Burke is seeking a temporary injunction restraining an appeals board from taking any further steps in his consideration of whether it was correct for Wilson's Hospital School to sack him 3 years ago. The disciplinary appeals panel is due to reconvene on Saturday, but that hearing now appears to be in doubt after Mr. Burke issued legal proceedings claiming he did not get fair procedure at an earlier panel hearing on December 13th in a lawsuit initiated yesterday. Mr. Burke claims he was not allowed to effectively cross-examine witnesses. He's also claimed that a member of the panel, Association of Secondary School Teachers in Ireland, President Geraldine O'Brien, was objectively biased and had prejudged the matter. So he'll have answers to those questions in the not-too-distant future. And lastly, we're already enduring long driving test waits, and it could get worse. Driving examiners at the Road Safety Authority have voted in favour of industrial action over concerns that workers are not properly protected by insurance if they are in a crash. The Forsha Trade Union accused the RSA of failing to ensure testers are fully covered by the State Claims Agency. A ballot on industrial action was launched by the union 4 weeks ago, and it was announced yesterday that 83% of eligible members voted, with 95% opting for strike action. The union is set to meet with the Workplace Relations Commission on Tuesday, January 20th, before determining its next steps. Have you anything to say in relation to those stories, or anything else for that matter?
The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio. Text WhatsApp 086 60 25000. Call 074 91 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com.
Right, we're joined on the programme now by Cormac Meehan. Good morning, Cormac.
Morning, Greg, and a happy new year to you and your listeners.
And a happy new year, and thank you very much for joining us on the programme today. You have opinions, don't you, on courtesy and manners?
Yeah, it's something that surfaced over the Christmas period and was probably brought to a head a few days ago when there was a profile piece in the Irish Times by a lady called Margaret Heffernan, who may or may not be well known in the media circles, about Dunn Stores and those companies that she's involved in. But she made a point to say that when she was recruiting people for senior positions in her business, she generally invited them to lunch or to have a bite to eat. And she closely observed the way they dealt with the people that served with them or interacted with them in the restaurants or the cafes that they went to. And she was quite upset when they didn't actually recognize or thank the servers or the people that they were dealing with. And the absence of this courtesy suggested to her that they weren't the sort of people that she would like to have working in her business. And that just led me to a train of thought where, again, I would be very conscious, having worked in professional services for the best part of 40 years, I have always felt the importance of both customers and service providers in my business.
Mm.
And if we were anyway discourteous to any of those sectors, we wouldn't have remained in business terribly long. Courtesy is something that is it's quite easy. It doesn't cost a lot. What it takes is your time and your consideration, and that was the thrust of my discussion.
What do you think, Cormac, the basic things then that we're seeing less of now? So when we say courtesy and manners, okay, I mean, it might seem quite obvious on the face of it. Just wondering what your everyday experience and notice of changes.
Well, I was in a service station, as it happened in Letterkenny, a few days before Christmas. And there was a young lad in front of me at the food counter, and he asked for a chicken wrap.
Mm-hmm.
And he just smiled at the lady behind the counter and said, "You know something, this has to be one of the best chicken wraps that you can get in the northwest of Ireland, and thank you very much."
Mm-hmm.
And I was totally taken by this young lad, who didn't look like a guy who was going to dish out a compliment. But then I spoke to the lady behind the counter and I said, "Wasn't that lovely?" And she said, "Yeah, she really, it sort of made her day." So people say that, you know, if you do take time to engage with the people that you encounter in those face-to-face consumer situations, that both parties actually benefit from it because it benefits the receiver and the giver.
And there's no tax on it, there's no VAT on it, there's no cost to it. It's actually just, and I think the giver gets as much from an exchange like that than the receiver. So in other words, if we all sort of made more of an effort to be courteous, to be polite, to be mannerly, to give each other a little bit of a lift, we all benefit from it. It's not just the receiver, I don't think.
I think so, and there was a movement too post-COVID when people were getting involved in things like, say, self-improvement and trying to just fine-tune themselves a little bit more after that dreadful experience for 2 years, where they were encouraged to be grateful and to try at least once a day to thank somebody, someone, or indeed yourself for something that you have and that you appreciate. And the consciousness of being aware and being grateful for what you have is not, it's not some highfalutin notion about being wealthy or being, you know, very, very endowed with benefits. But they can be very, very simple things, like being able to walk along the seafront on Rosnoul or Bondoran or wherever else, and being able to do that over Christmas, for example, or even meeting people that you haven't met for a long, long time. But I think where we fall down a little bit is that we don't actually, we're not cognizant of those things. And if we were a little bit more aware and recorded those issues, then we might appreciate them a whole lot more. And I think you're right. It benefits both the giver and the receiver.
Is there generational element to this, Cormac? And I don't want this to sort of sound like I'm youth bashing. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, there is a noticeable difference, I think, now, generally speaking, with sort of maybe how younger people might carry themselves to, they might have a couple of generations ago. And it's not always negative, don't get me wrong, but there are differences because they're being reared in different ways, they're interacting in different ways. That being said, I want to say this from the get-go before I ask this question, 99% of the places I go into, it's young people that are working in them, and I find them an absolute pleasure, don't get me wrong. But I suppose we're going to focus on whereby you go into places and it doesn't feel quite as friendly.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to sound, he says, like an old fogey, when you bring up these issues or discuss them. But I don't think it's a generational thing because, again, I have the same experience as you, that when I do go to, say, as I mentioned, the post office or the shops, that the youngsters, and I'm saying that not in a patronising way, but people younger than me, a whole lot younger than me, are very courteous and are very cognizant. And sometimes the duty is with the employer who would try and endow this quality in their employees and impress upon them the importance of exuding this sort of welcome.
Can I add to that, Cormac, if you don't mind, because there are, as we were talking, you know, there are places where you go with the family and there seems to be sort of, it's almost cultural within in the building whereby you go into one place and everyone is so friendly and, you know, can't do enough for you. And then obviously, you know, you give that back. But then you go to other places and you barely get acknowledged when you walk in through the door. And it's one of these, you know, it could be one of these, you know, wait until you're seated jobs, right? I think it does come from the top down in terms of how you run a business, if we were focusing on the business side of it for a moment.
It certainly does. But again, and I found myself... again, in the past, where I encounter that sort of a response, where, for example, somebody at a cash outlet doesn't make eye contact with you, doesn't look up, doesn't engage, and just sort of thrusts the receipt and the change into your hand, and that's the end of it. You know, but sometimes if you extend yourself and say, well, you know, and how are you today, or make some sort of an engagement to try and, but you know, I suppose what we have to again be very much aware of is we don't know what's impacting the person behind the counter or on the other side of the engagement. You know, have they had a bad day? Have they had a bad experience? It all boils back to the issue about courtesy and awareness of each other.
Yeah, indeed.
Because that will trickle down.
And I think you're of the view, Cormac, that, you know, let's start a new year and maybe put a little bit of cost-free effort into it. All of us.
I think that's a good idea. And it's funny that our efforts on the gratitude front tend to be focused around the end of the year, would you believe? Because we come up to Christmas and it's a sort of a party and festive season. And we sort of feel that there is a sense of goodwill largely there where we do, we tend to be happier in ourselves, you know, for the most part.
Yeah.
So it takes a little bit more effort to do it in the dark January days at this butt end of the year when we're all taking doing.
And some of these people we're talking of are 6 weeks between payments as well too, which can assert its own pressure. Cormac Meehan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay,
Greg.
Look after yourself and have a wonderful year. Do you agree? Disagree? 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. We were talking on the programme yesterday about these AI girlfriend apps that their makers are targeting at young people. It's probably most likely going to be predominantly young men and boys, whereby they have a virtual girlfriend in inverted commas and can see them in various states of undress, and in some cases you can actually use the image of a real person and doctor that to make this person that can be found into compromising situations, this AI person look like someone in real life. And I also mentioned yesterday something that really has been like a tsunami on the internet over the Christmas, and it's the emergence of people using AI, but most notably Grok AI, which is associated with X, to disrobe people. So they are getting pictures of politicians, journalists, celebrities, people that they know, uploading them to Grok and asking them to be stripped of their clothes, put into revealing outfits, and so on and so forth. And it is happening completely unchecked. The only thing that Grok actually did was in the Grok, which has its own account, there is a media section, and they disabled that media section because if you clicked into it, it was just literally a gallery of people being exploited, their images being doctored to leave them in compromising positions, to the point, by the way, where it is indistinguishable whether or not it's a real image or it is not. That's how advanced AI has got. This is obviously of great concern. Grok don't seem to be doing anything about it. Some children were placed in revealing outfits. They banned those accounts, apparently, but still it is being used in all manner of firstly, it's icky, it's disgusting, but it's also incredibly damaging. Nolan Devaney's manager of the Donegal Sexual Abuse and Rape Crisis Centre. And Nolan, I find it almost hard to believe that this is happening in plain sight on what is arguably one of the biggest, or certainly the biggest, news social media sites in the world.
Absolutely, Greg. I think it's very worrying for ourselves as an organisation, but also for us as a community. We should be very concerned that we have access very freely to AI and the bots that they use. And that even, I suppose, the policing of this with X is that they are not, they're not policing it themselves. They're waiting for humans to report it. So, I mean, we're all aware that AI is quite the intelligence that's behind it, that they can actually police themselves, but they're not doing this. They're not stepping up. They're leaving it to humans to report that it's been flagged, you know. So it's really deeply concerning that for people who are experiencing this, the psychological harm that they are experiencing is quite similar to what it would be if they actually experienced sexual abuse in person. So the deep pornography is targeting their reputation as well and makes them feel as though they've lost control. And when we talk about sexual violence, it's all about control, Greg. So this is taking it to a new level. It's one step removed in terms of there is no physical contact, but it's having a deep psychological impact on those affected.
Yeah, I just never thought we'd find ourselves in a position, Nolan, where we've spoken extensively over the years about fake images, the sharing of these images, how it's illegal, how it's the same as sharing an image without someone's permission. And yet here we have a situation whereby this is happening just completely and utterly in plain sight, and nothing seems to be being done about it. In the UK, Elon Musk has been encouraged to urgently deal with it. I haven't heard much from the Irish government, and X is based here, but something's going to have to be done. I mean, should this whole AI thing be suspended until such time as they can put in safeguards to ensure this doesn't happen? I'm on about from an X perspective.
I suppose we have to be looking to in our country is Common Demand, who would be looking after the X and what they're allowed to post and the policing of that. And currently what they're saying is they're speaking to their counterparts in Europe about this. And to be quite honest, that's not good enough. You know, that's passing the buck. Our government have responsibility and a duty of care to their people. So they should be stepping in, and especially, like you said, X is based here, you know. But I suppose part of that problem is they're worried about the financial side of it, the implications. But, I mean, you're talking about Elon Musk. He has not a care in the world. That man doesn't. This is not even relevant to him. As far as he's concerned, he's getting more airtime, so that's great. Mm. But we really should be speaking to is our government. They are there to protect our people and the most vulnerable in our communities. So this is impacting children, but sexual violence impacts all genders, but very specifically, this is targeting 99%. Mm. It's females that they're targeting.
Yes.
So it's very gender specific.
And yeah. And whilst they were seemingly able to block images where it's clearly a child, I mean, there is an age whereby you can be under, I mean, this is not acceptable at any age, but you can be under 18 and the AI software may continue with this sort of activity. So whilst it's an abuse of adult women, there are still predominantly women, teenaged girls that are being exploited by this. Mm-hmm. And the issue as well, Nolan, is how do you put the genie back into the bottle? Because there have been millions and millions and millions of these images created. And even if the accounts are banned, those images out there, and again, as I say, they're indistinguishable from the person being in that compromising position in real life. And they're out there, yeah, in the ether. You know, it's very concerning.
And there's no retrieving of that. And that's something, you know, and I've spoken about this before. This is about education too. So if you look at about who's perpetrating this and who's carrying out this, you, there's a wide spectrum here. You have the very end of the spectrum, you have the perpetrators who get off on this kind of demeaning of humans. And then you have young people who are now thinking it's a bit of crack. you know, and there is a huge misinformation out there around this is not, this is, you know, what you're doing is you're distributing images without someone's consent, you know, so you're stepping across a boundary here. And fundamentally what it is, and I know there's a lot of conflict about this at the minute, but it's an infringement on human rights, Greg. You know, we have a right to privacy. And whenever someone is sharing images like this here, it's compromising your integrity and your autonomy. And that's something that we need to be talking about. I suppose on a national level, this is something our government needs to look at, but within our local communities, even within Donegal, it's something we need to be having a conversation around. Mm. We should be able to talk to our daughters or granddaughters and say to them, you know, because everyone accesses AI. It's the future. That's the way it is. We're not going to suspend AI. It's going to continue. But it's about making sure that it's police, but making sure that we protect our young people and make sure we have the conversations, you know.
But the problem, you know, we have with that, Nolene, and not wishing to talk over you, and I think you're going to go on to sort of making sure that they discuss it if they've been a victim. In the past, again, sorry to sort of go back over old ground, but we talked about how, you know, don't allow yourself to be blackmailed or trapped into sharing intimate images because they could end up out on the internet. Now we have a situation where why we've got this massive, highly used software that's doing that even when people don't do it, which is that, again, I really struggle to get my head around it. So we can't even say to our young people, protect yourselves, because anyone, for that matter, they could, someone could take an image of them doing anything at a christening and doctor the image. So do you know what I mean? It's that's what's really, really worrying me.
Yeah, and again, I suppose that's looking at the victim perspective, but we have to look at the perpetrators. So we have to look at the people that are doing this. So we have to be saying, you know, you're entitled to post a photo of yourself. So it's all about choice. I can choose to post a photo of myself in a nice flowery dress, but I'm also choosing not to post a photo of myself naked. So when someone else chooses to derobe you, they are crossing the boundary. They're stepping into this. So it's about speaking to them as well. So when I say talking to our young people, yes, about, I suppose, being a victim of it, but also making sure that they're aware not to be perpetrators. Don't do this. Yeah. Do not think that it is just something because it's AI and you're sitting behind a screen that is not impactful. Yeah. Do not think that you can get away with this. This is, you know, you are infringing on someone's rights. You are crossing that boundary. Mm. So it is about not just about talking to the victims of it, but making sure that we speak to our young people to know that they can be perpetrators of this.
Yeah. The thing is, though, I don't think it's young people that are necessarily responsible for this. And I'm not saying you're blaming them, but, you know, I saw a journalist, a female journalist, who was complaining that her images had been doctored in this way. And literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of men, they can't all be 14-year-old boys or girls, said, well, you've posted pictures of yourself on your Facebook, and then continued to actually flood her timeline with doctored images to the point where she had to deactivate her account. All of those images of her are still up there. And that is, I don't know what's wrong with people that they think there's some way of justifying it. So in other words, these guys thought that because maybe she once posted a picture of herself on her own social media, that they were entitled then to doctor her images, and they bullied her to the point she had to remove herself from that platform. But all of those images of her, 99.9% of them being fake, are still out there. It's okay. How do you put that genie back in the bottle?
Well, you can't. And I'm not saying that, you know, the entirety of this is around young people. And what I'm saying is we have to have a conversation with our young people. Mm. And I said earlier, the spectrum of the perpetrators of this is very, very broad. You have it when it's maybe just someone who is accessing AI and thinking, what will I do with this? How can I use it? Right through to the other end of the spectrum where it is that perverted person who's sitting in their basement like that, sitting behind a keyboard warrior who thinks they can do anything without any impact, but also people who actually get off on this. This is the predatory part of it. But it is a wide spectrum of abusers here that you're talking about, and predominantly it is males that are doing this. And it's about looking at our males and saying, why? What is wrong here? What is happening in your life that you feel the need to go in, take someone's image and change it? And you know, what part of that psychological, behind that? You know, there's something deeply worrying about our society if that's where our males are heading.
And, I just wonder, is it normalising things? This is a bit of a rant, and you can agree or disagree or opine if you like, Nolene. But, you know, the one thing I've noticed about Elon Musk, who runs X, as he was trying to demonstrate As he was trying to demonstrate the power of Grok and its AI ability. I always thought it was strange that he seemed to choose these cartoony, Asian, quite, you know, prepubescent type characters to show how powerful it was. He is in line for a $1 trillion bonus if he continues to be successful in his businesses. He is the person behind this. He could stop it today. But he's got so much influence, I'm not sure Europe wants to take him on. And his best mate now, back again, is Donald Trump, which Donald Trump has been implicated in all sorts of things via the Epstein files, despite trying to cover it up. And we can see how it then feeds into sort of this geopolitical thing where he's trying to take over Greenland. Europe needs him to back the deal in Ukraine. And is anyone actually going to take on Elon Musk when both he and Donald Trump are talking about freedom of speech and freedom of expression and being very critical of Europe? It would just make you wonder, you know, given the degrees of separation to the most powerful people in the world, is this a plan to normalize women in this way? Or, well, I don't want to sound like I'm going down some rabbit hole, Nolene, but, you know, basically you can see who's in charge of it and who they're connected to, and it worries me.
Absolutely, and it is worrying because they have the power to change it. That's what I was saying. I mean, so if you look at Google and YouTube, YouTube had part of their AI recently was able to create a murder scene of a woman. And whenever the planes came in, they were able to create AI bots that were able to police that then and take it down and monitor it, so it hasn't happened since. But when you're talking about X, and again, this comes down to choice, but it's also about capitalism and money. You know, I suppose Elon Musk has power and he has money. So this means nothing to him. It's about, I suppose, that profile raising and making sure that he gets his $1 trillion bonus. But also, it's about our government, Greg. What it boils down to is we have access to in our country, they have choice over. And it's not about stopping AI. It's about making sure that it is policed in a way that are vulnerable in society and the rest of us, our human rights are protected.
Yes.
I mean, you can go on to X and you can access porn on X, you know. It's about,
well, I said three or four or 5 years ago, X is the, or Twitter as it was then, is the biggest porn site in the world, and anyone can access it. Mm-hmm. You don't need to prove your age. I just worry on the bigger picture here that we don't want to pee off Elon Musk in this country. We don't want to pee off his mate. And I think the cost to that is the rights of women. And I'm really worried that that's just the way we are. I'm sorry, I keep saying I'm really worried. It's just, this is really significant, and it can be any of us at any time. It's not a problem for someone else. It could be a teenager that comes home from school distressed today saying that these images are going around, and it's very concerning. Nolene, you know, if anyone, this is, in any other circumstances, this would be, you know, I mean, it would be a crime. Right. And I'm not saying it's not a crime, but it's happening so much on this platform. If people need support, I presume if they've been the victim of this activity on the world's biggest news platform, I presume the Rape Crisis Centre is there to offer any advice or support.
Absolutely. And that's what I had said earlier. You know, it's about us being able to have conversations with the women in our lives, you know, whether they are teenagers or if they're in their early 20s or early 30s, there is no one who will be untouched by this. So it's about having that conversation and making sure that if it has happened to someone and they're not sure, because sometimes we can experience different forms of sexual violence and we're not 100% sure if it actually reaches that threshold. So reach out and speak to us. Even if it's just to have a conversation, to ask the question, but know that there's a safe space out there where you can speak to someone who is impartial. Sometimes speaking to family can be quite difficult, but it's really important that they have that opportunity to speak to someone. So our number is 074-912-8211, or they can access us through our email, which is info@donegalrapecrisis.ie.
Do you think we need finally some clarification? Because my understanding is that the sharing of intimate images, the distribution of intimate images, is a crime in this country. You know, these are sexual images or could be deemed as such. So what you have is that people in this country are routinely doing this using the X platform. Do we need some clarification from the state if it's illegal on that platform to be doing that, if that makes sense? Because it does. What's happening on X and what you can see quite easily does seem to be at odds to the laws of our land.
Absolutely. I mean, it is. It's the distribution of indecent images, which is under, it falls under cuckold law. And, you know, it's without the consent of the person. So, yeah. So I don't see how they can be beyond the reach of our legislation.
Okay.
You know, they operate in our land.
Nolene, thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate it. That's Nolene Devenny there.
The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Sometimes women in particular are increasingly using AI to fix imperfections, says a listener, such as thinning hair, uneven skin or wrinkled clothes in professional photos. That's not a wrong thing, but what you're referring to is wrong. But how do you balance the good versus the bad of AI? Well, people are entitled to do whatever they want with their own images, is how I'd balance that. And conversely, no one is entitled to do anything to somebody else's image. So that's how I would sort that out. I've noticed the whitewashing of images of my friends of colour is a default setting on AI. A caller says the only real way to stop AI images is to go after the top man, Elon Musk. If he doesn't do something about it, he should be charged with facilitating child exploitation images. On manners, I totally agree with that man. Good manners is free to everyone. Having worked in the food industry for many years, there's nothing nicer than a please and a thank you. It's so disappointing to see and hear ads before Christmas to remind the general public to be kind to retail staff should this not be a norm for everyone. I think those ads you were talking about were for nighttime, the nighttime economy, if I'm not mistaken. I think John voiced them. And that was really asking people to be kind to servers behind bars and stuff. But you may well be right. Sharon, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Right. Now, what's your experience of manners and courtesy?
Well, it's just, I'm a bit nervous about talking, actually, because I've never been talked on a radio station.
Don't you worry
before.
About that, Sharon. But, take your time. There's no panic and you're doing well.
But I notice when I've been standing at bus stops, you know, I'm a bus user, and, you know, people pushing on in front of you, you know, when you've been standing there. And I'm not talking about younger people or older people, but both, you know. Mm. And, you know, if I saw a woman with a pram or a young child, I would let her go. I wouldn't feel entitled to get on the bus first. But, you know, I've seen it sort of, you know, nearly knocking people down. And, you know, when you go to get off the bus, you can be blocked, you know, from getting off the bus. And sometimes it doesn't matter because you're not in a hurry. But, you know, everybody kind of, there's like a mass push, you know, to get off the bus. So I just think there could be a bit more manners. And the bus drivers, they're great, you know.
Mm.
And most people say thank you to the bus drivers.
We do, don't you we? Know? Thank you, driver. Yeah. It's just really, I suppose, people are locked in. They want to make sure they get a seat. They want to make sure they get off first. And if that means barging and past you or jostling you, well, then so be it.
Yeah.
And then if they went then to go and say thanks to the driver, it's kind of a bit of a contradiction. But that's another just area of manners and courtesy that we could improve on, Sharon. Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it in shops as well, you know, where maybe you've loaded up your shopping and, you know, you use one of those, you know, maybe in a bigger shop, like one of those scanners.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to get your, to sort of help get through the queues, and you've loaded all your shopping up and then you're going to put it in a bag. And then maybe a member of staff stands behind you saying, come on now, if you could all just, you know, pack your bags as you scan, you know, and then everybody stared at you in the queue. And, you know, but I would never reply back or say anything because I just think it's not worth the energy, you know, and somebody might be having a bad hair day, you know. But and then you can be in other shops where there's nobody there, nobody in the actual shop, you know, except yourself. You know, there's a few sort of small shops maybe that, and when you go to buy something, the person won't, you know, they just keep staring at the floor and sort of tittering along a shelf, you know, and you know, it's just bad manners, I think.
And I do understand that sometimes people can have bad hair days, but at the end of the day too, we all do try and put on a brave face, don't we? I mean, sometimes I've felt like absolute crap going into a shop, but you do like to say, oh, thank you very much. Do you know what I mean? So I suppose that's a two-way street. Everyone can have bad days for different reasons. And do you find, Sharon, that this is kind of widespread, or are we talking about maybe one or two instances that you come across in a week, for example?
I think it's quite widespread, you know. Yeah. But then you get the exception where, you know, some people in shops. Well, I live in a small village called Muffin. Most of the shops around here, everybody's just, anybody that serves, she's just like lovely, you know. And the shops can be quite crowded sometimes, like, you know, like, and you know, everybody seems to be respectful, you know. And you know, it's the same in some bigger towns, you know. It just depends on the shop, you know. There just seems to be an air in some shops that the customers don't matter. That's what you sort of, that you're annoying sort of somebody. I know it's all self-service in quite a lot of places, you know, but just where there are people, you know, in shops that, you know, that you're just a nuisance because you're like a customer, you know. And I see some older people really struggling, and you know, like I would help somebody like that in the shop, you know, even though maybe, you know, because they can't get their shopping on quick enough, their bag, you know. And you sort of think, well, it wouldn't take much to help them instead of saying, now, come on, could you hurry up? You know?
Yeah, I get you.
That's just me, like.
Yeah, and listen, sometimes we get locked in and we don't realise, and this conversation might make us all change our behaviour a little bit. Sharon, you did amazing. Thank you so very much indeed. Have a great day. Thanks. Hello and thanks seems to be so hard for people to say. Another, the staff in shops should speak and acknowledge their customers. I find this to be the difference between small and larger stores. I find that it's the managers in suits who don't acknowledge you. You know, I would have frequented a shop in the past that was very friendly, and a new manager was brought in, you know, where, like, come on, everything's so big, come on up here, you know what I mean? All like, you know, trying to be all efficient and blah, and unaware that the customer is getting this vibe of panic, right? You know, and you could see over time the attitude of the staff changing, because this person, the supervisor, I presume that he or she was, all of a sudden was like, you know, being trying to be just, it felt like an uncomfortable space to be in. So I think it does start from the top down. Right, it's been 25 years in the making, I suppose you could say. But the EU-Mercosur trade agreement will go before MEPs in the European Parliament in Strasbourg on Friday. Is that right, MEP Kieran Mullooly?
Well, not quite as great. Good morning to you. Good morning to your listeners.
It's up for a vote on Friday. Yeah.
So just to explain, to be very clear about this, there are two votes which are required for this to actually go through. So the second vote is the MEPs. That's me. The week after next, Greg, in Strasbourg. Not happening this week. No vote, no agreement will go through this week. This week what's happening is the member states are coming together. It's not even the ministers, it is the ambassadors of Ireland and the other 25 member states who will discuss this on Friday and make and ask for a written decision over the weekend from Ireland. So a letter comes back to the Taoiseach on Saturday and he must sign it, yes or no, by Monday to indicate the member states' position.
Which is inevitable. Ireland will back this deal because Italy are going to back this deal as well, and it will be framed that concessions have been made, derogations have been extended, and we don't want to damage our relations in Europe. It's going to pass anyway. The writing's on the wall. The vote might as well take place right now because that's exactly how it's going to go.
Well, I heard that speech, Greg, not from you, but from other people on the 10th of December, the 15th of December. And you know what? On the 19th of December, it all fell apart. And on this occasion, I'm predicting there will be other unexpected events in the next couple of days. And I'll tell you why, Greg. Because the deal that was put together yesterday for the Italians is nothing short of a three-card trick. And what they've announced is they're going to bring an additional 45 billion euro back into the cap situation over the next 7 years. But you know what? Every farmer in Donegal knows this, Greg. That 45 billion euro was taken out of the cap package in July. They're put. In fact, at that stage, they took 97 billion out of the package. Now they're putting back in 45. Farmers won't be fooled by this. And there's a second problem.
Well, farmers don't have to be fooled by it, though. It just has to be an agreement between representatives of European countries and enough MEPs.
Well, I have to be fair to Minister Martin Hayden. I don't know if you saw his statement this morning, Greg. He has actually pointed out this disparity. Martin Hayden has said already this morning, he sees exactly what's going on here. They reduced the budget in July. Now they've put it back. We're still short of where we were. And I can read very clearly from the Minister of Agriculture, he's not happy with it either.
No, but so, at the same time, Micheál Martin is giving it the soft sell in China.
Well, he certainly has been talking from both sides of his mouth, Greg. And this is where it gets interesting politically, because I've been speaking in the last few days to independent members of the government. Remember these people who voted to go with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael? Marion Harkin, Kevin Boxham-Warren, and the likes of Sean Kenny. I've been speaking to some of them and to their supporters. They are saying they've been told the vote will be no from Ireland. So if Micheál Martin goes ahead after his soft speaking in China and votes yes, I believe we have a much more serious issue next Monday in this country than just Mercosur. We'll be facing a new election.
Okay. Joe Sweeney's chair of the Donegal IFA. Joe, the consequences of this, I know it's journalism. I was listening to RT this morning and they were talking about how post-Brexit everyone said our beef exports to the UK would plummet. Well, it's maybe Merz Corp could be good. It's a nonsense argument because, firstly, you know, the UK doesn't produce enough beef. They need beef. The EU is somewhat awash with beef, so we're going to literally be competing for shelf space. So it's in my view, I could be wrong. I see it as a completely flawed counter argument. Joe Sweeney, you're in no doubt that Merz Corp would be the death knell for many in the industry, if not the industry as a whole. No, Joe's not there. Sorry, Joe's gone. I'll put the same question to you whilst I bring Joe back in, Kieran.
I was kind of amused by this yesterday, this argument, Greg. You don't have to tell the people, the fishermen in Donegal, what Brexit did, do you? Do people understand what Brexit did? We know quite well. They lost millions.
We are seeing decent beef exports. It hasn't had, but it is. It's apples and oranges. Sorry, I'll come back to you, Joe. Your feelings on if Mercosur will be passed by the European countries on Friday, and if it is, and if it's passed by the MEPs, you're in no doubt it has a very negative impact on the Irish farming industry.
Yeah, it's going to destroy the farming industry here. It's probably the first year we ever seen a return for the food that's produced. And if Mercosur goes through, that's going to be just taken away, and it's going to wipe out all the good work that has been done. Because for generations, the income was poor, and farmers were not making what they should have made. And this was the first year ever, and now it's going to be all turned back on its head again, and just set right back where it come from.
I was looking at some statistics which show less than 5% of those in Irish farming now are under 35. There's as many over 65 almost as there are in the 35 to 65 category. Are we trying to bail a sinking ship here?
No, I don't believe so. Okay, we've lost a generation. The average farmer at the moment is 59 years of age in Ireland. But at the same time, if there was money to be made, there's still plenty of people looking to do it, but sure, they can't make a living on it. And this was the first year that you could say, yeah, there was a living to be made in agriculture and food and beef production, sheep production. And that it's just going to be just turned right around again if this deal goes through, because they're going to import that meat and it's going to just take away. We can't produce the food at the cost.
The IFA are attending the Independent Ireland Mercosur protest in Athlone on Saturday, the 10th of January. Why Athlone? Is this not something that should be locking down the streets of Dublin if it's that important? No harm to Athlone.
I'll come in on that, Greg.
Yeah, go on.
If I can, as the organisers. Firstly, we knew there was work going on behind the scenes to try and do a deal with Italy. We knew there is no Dáil is sitting this week, or indeed not until the end of next week. So we chose to proceed this week, not in front of Leinster House, but nobody there, Greg, but in a central location in the Midlands of Ireland, which is suitable for everybody to attend. I'm thrilled to see a bus, for instance, from Inishowen, confirmed for Saturday morning, coming into Athlone at 11 o'clock. I'm thrilled to hear from Councillor Michael Clark of Independent Ireland that there's 220 tractors coming in convoy
up and what kind of coverage it gets over the weekend, because I mean that is where I suppose some of the impact comes from. Kieran, where, is there a statement from the Lowry crew in relation to Mercycour to sort of threaten the government with pulling support if they vote in favour of Mercycour? Because the Irish government's in a tricky wicket if they are seen to go against the big boys.
Absolutely. And the answer is there's no statement. But I know from speaking to councillors who work with the three independents, this is a day-to-day contact that's going on. And the three independent TDs have as recently as last Friday, Saturday, were telling us through their contacts that the vote would be no. Yesterday, I can tell you, Greg, that we were told from that grouping again that Martin Hayden would oppose the moves today at the agriculture meeting in Brussels. If it turns around on Friday that the European Irish ambassador to Europe, Angela Donoghue, gets up at that meeting and says her instructions are from Ireland to vote yes, or the letter is sent out, as I said, comes to Micheál Martin's desk when he gets back from China Saturday, he votes yes, there will be a major political problem on Monday.
So do you want
There's
to,
no way around I'm this. Not, I'm farmers
not,
know this.
I'm not a gambler, but do you want a 50 euro charity wager? I believe Ireland will vote for it. And I will...
I don't believe so. I honestly don't believe
would
so.
Would you put 50 quid on it?
A major electoral issue.
Right, okay, we shall see.
But I have to say, Greg, the protest is important. It would be very dangerous for this government, or indeed Europe, to ignore a protest by over 10,000 farmers. The will of the people is important here.
Understood.
And that's why we're showing our solidarity with the farming community on Saturday.
Councillor, MEP Kieran Mullooly, thank you for your time. Joe Sweeney, Chair of Donegal IFA, I'm sure you encourage any members who can to get down to this protest in Athlone finally, and thanks for joining us as well too, Joe.
Thank you, Greg.
Look after yourself. Thanks.